welcome to What in God's Name. I'm Chris Owen. Shana will be back next week. We're doing theological and philosophical reflections on current events and culture. Today we have part two of the What in God's Name conversation with Dan Andrus, Concord, New Hampshire Fire Chief. Before we get to part two, I've got three things to say. Number one is this. In the first part of our interview with Dan, Dan mentioned three firefighters who have confronted their post-traumatic stress disorder. He mentioned them by name: Mike Stevens from Salt Lake City, Todd Donovan from Derry, New Hampshire, and Scott Geiselhart from Frazee, Minnesota. We have put links to those people and to those stories at the top of our show notes. So if you go to the very top of the show notes, both for part one and for today's show part two, you will find links to their stories. There's a story in the Salt Lake City newspaper about Mike Stevens. There's a WMUR story about Todd Donovan. And then Scott Geiselhart has his own website. We've also posted the suicide prevention hotline number and website. The second thing to say, the conversation between Dan and me is full of Christian language, and Shana and I are sensitive to our non-Christian listeners because we don't want to be exclusive. We don't want to shut people out of the conversation. So if it feels too Christian for you, we invite your feedback, your suggestions, your input, your perspective. What language would you use to help us understand what is going on in the world? Because curiosity and going deep are core values of What in God's Name. Finally, before we get to the rest of the interview with Dan, my favorite part of this second half of the conversation, Dan talks about going into the brokenness, that true religion is not an escape from suffering, it's not an escape from brokenness, or an escape from the messy reality of our lives. True religion actually invites us into the truth of our lives, invites us to see our lives as they really are without fear. And my favorite quote, in fact, it's going to be the name of today's show. Dan says, Christianity will take you into the heart of the world's brokenness. I love that. Christianity will take you into the heart of the world's brokenness. And I would add that it's in that place of the world's brokenness that we will meet and find common cause with people of all faiths and people of no faith, all who are moved by compassion and self-giving love. We pick up the conversation with Dan talking about the colleagues and friends he has lost through suicide. Here's Dan.
I've had a number of other friends too. I had a very close friend who died the next year from suicide, and these are impactful. And I think about them, and I think about how unnecessary those deaths were and how unnecessary opioid deaths are now.
So you've been impacted with these people who you were close to. How have you managed? Because you've seen some stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
How have you managed to deal with that?
I was raised thoroughly grounded in the Roman Catholic faith. My mother was an adult convert. At the point that she approached the church for baptism, she was hungry, and the church filled her, and she embraced God and Christianity and Roman Catholicism, and I came along right after that. So I grew up in a household, interesting, a very conservative Roman Catholic faith. My parents were completely upset by Vatican II, but my mother was an incredibly faithful Christian. My dad was too, in his own very quiet, non-demonstrative way, but my mother was active and raised us in that. And Christianity is a faith for the broken. It really, it's at its best. I think people say, well, I'm going to clean up my life and then I'm going to go to church and life is going to be good. I'm going to be in church and I'm going to have that beautiful house with a picket fence and life is going to be good because I'll be going to church. I tell people, watch out. If you get on that path, it can take you to places where you never dreamed and sometimes never wanted to go. If you become serious about this Christian lifestyle, it can take you probably not far physically, but it will take you into the heart of the world's brokenness.
So would you say that as you have walked in your journey of faith, that being a person of faith has led you to your own broken places.
Yes. Yes. Again and again and again. And early on, I remember I started this profession when I was 19 years old. Right after my 19th birthday, I was working in the emergency department as part of my EMT training. And we had a cardiac arrest and the person died. I'd never seen a person die before. And it was heavy and weighty, but it was something that I kind of held within. And that happens a lot. And I had prayers, and in my mid-20s, I discovered the Psalms. And for me, it has been this place of being absolutely okay with brokenness. I cry easily, and I'm okay with that. My wife and I sometimes, my wife refers to us as recreational criers. There's nothing better than a story which touches us so deeply that we both cry. I think one of those things is I can be with people in really deep pain. A lot of people will avoid them, and a lot of people will try and cheer them up. But one of the people in our department lost a daughter about 5 months ago to a drug overdose. And we have had a close and surprisingly a good relationship because I'm just there and I offer nothing but tears and just, you know, and I think he knows I'm really shattered. And it's just the sense of incredible devastation and loss that I know he must experience. So I'm comfortable with that. I preach about that. I say sometimes we are the person who stands at the foot of the cross where the world is in its greatest suffering. And we can feel helpless, but we can embrace those who are impacted by that too.
A couple of things I loved about what you just said, I want to respond to them. One is when you were talking about how this is what I heard, so you can correct me if I mischaracterize this. Some people come to religion thinking, boy, if I follow this religion, I'm going to be impervious to pain, or my faith mm-hmm. will, my life will be seamless.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm always suspicious of that and probably approached religion the same way in my life at some mm-hmm. point. And your sense that, no, if we're walking, especially in the Christian tradition, we are walking into our brokenness, and that, and in there, in that space of brokenness, we can get in touch with our own and also then with the world's
yes.
brokenness. There's something in there about true religion versus not quite so true religion.
Yes, there's the cultural religion, which says this is what you need to be happy, and there's a prosperity gospel, the key to success, and religion itself actually kind of promoted this within our lifetimes about this is the key that, you know, have your house, have your religion, your kids will grow up, go to college, go off and get good jobs.
Right. It's all a shiny,
and
shiny
support
picture.
You, and you never need to worry about death or anything like that.
Yeah.
I have a faith which is really conditioned by tragedy. And I am glad of it. It is where I find the deepest meaning to my faith, and it's where I find the deepest meaning to my life and my work.
How free are you able to be in your work with your faith?
I preach my faith with my life and not necessarily words, even though I do in another context preach with words. But it's interesting that most people don't know what my background is. If they know, they know it's because my wife is an Episcopal priest. And people know us as a clergy couple, but as far as me talking to a fire department staff member about the things that I'm talking here about, doesn't happen. I don't bring that into my workplace so much, but it doesn't mean I can't bring in something that is Christ's love and acceptance, but it wouldn't be particularly noticed as such.
You bring who you are.
You bring who you are, yes. And if we read the Gospels, it's powerful to think about Jesus and the experience people must have had of him. And the late Bishop Tom Shaw of the Diocese of Massachusetts talked at one Good Friday sermon in a very gentle and tender way. He said he gave them hope. He gave them an idea for a future, and he gave them hope, and he accepted them, and he healed them. And he talked about the experience of Jesus, which was for me was very powerful, and not only powerful in terms of acceptance, but transformed people to be more like him. So I'm not sure how we got there so quickly.
Well, it's a good conversation.
It's a good conversation.
That's how
yes.
we got there so quickly. Yeah. The other thing that you talked about yourself, and I'm grateful for you to share, because I think just like your friends who are talking about their own traumas and recovery from trauma, I just think it's so important for men to share. And you acknowledged your own sense of vulnerability in that you are a crier. And I join you in that.
Yes.
But I latch onto that because Shana and I, as we're doing this show, we've had a couple of conversations about masculinity and what it means to be a man. So this integration of our emotional life seems to me to be a really crucial component of finding our fullest masculinity, which is not easy in this culture. I mean, your statistics of these suicides, I think, you know, there's a sense of I'm strong enough by myself to carry whatever pain. Again, back to this sense of pain, like, you know, not supposed to show pain, supposed to be strong, whatever strong means in that context.
Yeah.
And maybe the strength, the real strength, is to be able to cry and to be able to go into the brokenness, back to that other image that we've talked about. So there are lessons here about what it is to be a man.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In this culture.
Yeah. It's the current term is toxic masculinity. It is the reliance upon the ego, the self, and there is a way of being a man and being masculine, which can incorporate an emotional side and should. And Jesus ought to be seen as the preeminently as the image of God, who is human, both men and women. And in that foundation for humanity, it's where we find our greatest thing, which is to be open and loving of each other.
And that's loving of ourselves.
And ourselves, too. We don't forget that. Yeah. We never want to forget what the line from the Psalms, I am marvelously made.
Which includes those feelings that are sometimes experienced as being shameful in some men.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. If you get socialized to be invulnerable, like you as a man should never show what you're feeling, then if you sense some weakness in yourself, that could be a source of shame, and then you're missing that gospel message.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm so very lucky. In the Episcopal Church of New Hampshire, we are led by Bishop Rob Hirschfeld. His own sense of masculinity, and he's a marvelous husband, 3 great kids, and he's written a book called Without Fear or Shame, and I love that. And that's been a big part of his message, that we are called to live without fear and without shame. And that's not where most of us are.
Yeah. We need to take a quick break for this word as What in God's Name begins a funding campaign. Shana, you know what? We've been live now for 4 months.
Oh my God, it's hard to believe it.
And it's a good moment to invite our listeners to a deeper level of support and engagement. So for a limited time, now through Easter, we are asking for your financial support. When you support What in God's Name, Shana, you are supporting our core values, which are curiosity, depth, and
shine in the light.
Shine in the light.
Friends, here's how to make a donation. Go to our website at www.whatingods.com. WHATINGODS.com. Don't go to What in God's Name because you'll come up with a bunch of cheesy videos and YouTubes. WhatInGods.com will take you to our website. Once you're there, you can link in to give either through Patreon, and if you need a tax deduction, link in through Filmmakers Collaborative. They're our fiscal sponsor. Let's make a difference for our culture, friends, and we thank you in advance for your support.
Thank you in advance for your generosity, and now back to our show. In my theological view, that doesn't happen without a loving relationship.
Yes.
The healing for shame is the reception of love.
Yes.
And acceptance. That can be offered by humans to each other. We experience. And it can be offered through the love of God.
Yes.
To us, if we can accept that.
Yes.
Which is so hard to accept sometimes.
It is, but even driving out here today, it's a snowy February New Hampshire day. And driving by rivers and just driving through this particular area, which I have never been in before. And it was just for a moment to be alive and to be taking in these sights was, I wouldn't call it a peak experience. It's not a transfiguration kind of mountaintop experience, but it was certainly a nice way to spend a Sunday drive.
Open to the gift, huh?
Open to the gift of the day.
Yeah. What kind of people are seeking to be firefighters today? What are they looking for?
There are some generalizations, and one of the things that when I was coming to Concord, the acting chief told me, he said, we have an unusually high number of second career people. We have people who are coming on in their late 30s, which is probably about 10 to 15 years older than the typical firefighter of a generation or so ago. And we have people coming from IT backgrounds and technical backgrounds, and they're coming to us going, you know, I really enjoy the challenge of my work, but it isn't doing it for me. I'm talking now with a young woman who is getting her MBA, and she's had many good years in the public sector in terms of financial management, and she said, this isn't doing it for me. So we're seeing people who really want to be in a profession that they say is being helpful, valuable, and socially useful. Even though sometimes, frankly, you see so much drug use, you see kids who are living in conditions and with families that breaks your heart and the downside, but we really do see people who are interested and on fire about doing this job. And my constant question to everyone who I have hired in the last 5 years is, how's it going for you? How's this job working? And invariably the response I get back is, I love it, which is the appropriate thing to say to the fire chief.
Yeah, it is. That's a good thing
to
say.
Yeah, it's there are people who are seeking a way of life that's about giving and service, and that's neat to me.
That reminds me of what we were speaking of with regards to vocation.
Yes.
Even if the language is not the language of vocation, which is theological language, people aren't coming to you and saying, I feel called to be a firefighter, but they're saying, I'm looking for something that's more fulfilling.
Yes, yeah.
Than what I'm doing now. I'm looking for something more meaningful than what I'm doing now. This is kind of a secular way or a non-theological way of talking about vocation. I mean, even when we do talk about vocation, we do talk about meaningfulness.
We do.
And fulfillment. Mm-hmm. For certainly, those are signs that we're doing what God is asking us to do. We should have a sense of purpose, a sense of energy that we bring, enthusiasm to our work.
Yes, and we typically have over 100 applicants when we do a recruitment, and we sugar that down, to borrow a New Hampshire phrase I learned a few years ago, to probably about a dozen people that we qualify for a roster, and we'll hire about half of those. So it's a very competitive process, and we get the best people. I think what makes people so competitive and so very good in that is the passion for doing this work. There's a palpable quality when you're interviewing people between someone who's looking for a job and someone who is looking for a place in a department to make a way of life out of service.
Which leads me to one of the last questions I wanted to ask you about, because as I've thought about the work of first responders, firefighters, EMTs, we use the language of service. We also sometimes, maybe I do as an observer, I don't know if you use the language, but you're saving, in certain circumstances, you're actually saving people's lives.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Again, from my training, the way I look at the world, that's deeply theological. What is it? What does it mean to save someone?
I have had people who were in cardiac arrest, not many, but through the years, a handful of people who we brought back and resuscitated, walked out of the hospital, and continue to live their lives. And no one lives forever. And anything like any resuscitation, resurrection is permanent, resuscitation is going to be temporary. But in looking back, and certainly nearing now the end of my career in the fire service, I'm saying, okay, it's a blast. To put it very colloquially, it's an incredible source of pride and satisfaction to know that I made the ultimate difference in somebody's life. And I'm thinking that there were many drug overdoses where I gave people Narcan and they came back up. One of them slugged me, and that was an interesting thing. I remember my partner was sitting there. This guy sat up and punched me and knocked me over on my back and jumped out the window holding his IV bag. My partner didn't even look up and just said, next time you might want to give the Narcan more slowly.
And I have to just interrupt you, Dan, for our listeners. Dan is not a small man. So
no, we're not.
He's a tall and strong man. So this guy just
put a lot of effort behind that punch. I'll tell you what, it literally knocked me for a roll. So, yes, I guess you could say I saved somebody's life, and I got belted for it. But it's giving people second chances, which is the exciting thing about some of the programs we're doing now through Concord Fire, which is really getting funding. And this goes to the heart, too, of our own mental health crisis. it's hard when you help somebody and they're broken again the next day and you go back to them. And addiction seems like one of those things where people can't be helped out. But there's really, I think, a sense of hope. And changing our people's roles, our roles, to be more of a referral and getting people into that definitive treatment. We don't have a problem. If you're having a heart attack, what we're going to do for you is keep you alive until you get to the hospital and start those interventions that will save your life. But the definitive care happens in the hospital. The same thing for people who are with addiction. We will accompany you, we'll keep you alive, we'll give you Narcan, and we'll get you to a place that definitive treatment can happen. It will make sure that you stay alive.
I love this sense of second chances, because we all need second chances in so many different ways.
Yeah, and we all get second chances, yeah.
Yeah.
We may not be dead from an overdose, but we find ourselves again and again in our lives dead spiritually.
Sure.
And I love the fact that we are now in the season and leading into Lent, where we will walk that story of death and tomb and empty tomb.
Yeah. And we make mistakes in our relationships, and those need second chances. We're people who need second chances.
Yes, yes. That's why this wonderful institution of marriage is the place where this is done again and again and again. Last night, my wife, I was going out to work out, and she said, "You might want to replace the bag of Doritos that you consumed that I was planning on as a dinner accompaniment." And I brought it back, but I brought back nacho cheese and not Cool Ranch.
So oh,
my extras, and she said, "You know, I guess I should have expected it." But yes.
You know what Martin Luther said about becoming a saint? Martin Luther said, "If you want to be a saint, don't go to a monastery and be by yourself. That's just way too easy. If you want to be a saint, get married."
Oh, marvelous.
So that whole sense of second chances.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that you would like to add? Something I didn't ask that you wish I might have? Or I've just enjoyed this conversation, Dan. I just wanted to make sure that if there was anything else you wanted to say, you had a chance to say it.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. One of my favorite stories is The Road to Emmaus, where Jesus talks with people unaware of who he is. And I have the sense that you and I have been on that road to Emmaus today, and our hearts are burning within us. And we talked earlier about the joining in community and the sharing of experiences. And I've often thought that worship is just kind of a pretext for us to get together and to share our lives with each other.
Beautiful.
Thank you. It's been a wonderful and grace-filled time.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the time. Once again, we've been talking with Dan Andrus, Fire Chief of Concord, New Hampshire, our capital city. Dan, have a great afternoon.
It couldn't get better than this, but I will. Thank you.
Check out our philosophy and theology quotes on our Instagram page, at What in God's, or our Facebook page, What in God's Name. Of course, you can reach us through our website, whatingods.com. That's whatingods.